session number 5225, reel 6.
Mr. Butt, reel 6.
Well, such was their concern over the condition of my legs. And I really was in agony at times, but, well, you just grinned and bared it. No pun intended there. But pressure was put on, and reluctantly my parents agreed that I could wear long trousers for my general well-being. But of course, the thing is, you see, that once you wear long trousers, you're growing up, and mother liked to have a child, and her child is growing up, and so perhaps there was that parental concern. Might have been misconstrued, but there we are. So I had my long trousers a little bit earlier than I would have done.
Did your friends have long trousers or short trousers?
No, I think they had long trousers. It was just a question that one grew up a little bit earlier than... Or it was a totally different lifestyle, country as opposed to the town. Another example of their concern, for which I was grateful, was that every winter one gets colds, but my colds were particularly terrible. I had a rasping cough, so much so that when one coughed, it went deep down one's chest, and it was almost your backbone was rattling against you. Your chest, and it sounded absolutely almost like whooping cough. Well, Uncle couldn't stand this, and he felt that I was worse than I really was. It sounded bad enough. So he would put on his liniment on my back. He had a particularly powerful liniment. It wasn't one that he made up himself, it was one that he bought. It was a proprietary brand, although I haven't seen it since or heard of it before. It was called chameleon oil. There were two types of chameleon oil. There was the household type and the veterinary type. The veterinary type was known as cattle chameleon, and that was stronger, and that's what I had. Well, he used it on himself, so it was quite safe. So I had it and applied on a bit of flannel and strapped to my back. Whether it was that and that alone, or whether it was the blackcurrant tea that I had, that's fascinating. Tea with blackcurrant jam in it. Delicious. The only trouble was one only could have that when one had a cold. And it cured the cold. And I haven't coughed as bad as that ever since. My wife seems to cough like it now, but and she sounds, I suppose, as I used to sound then. So, a great deal of concern that they had, which was nice. It was a caring household. Of course, one just eased into their way of life. So, say, I washed outside. One could have hot water, either a kettle boiled on the gas ring, which was outside, or on the grate indoors. Uncle used to wash outside, and I would wash outside. Auntie would wash outside in the summer. She would have a wash inside in the winter. But no, not me. I had to go outside. It was cold. A little hand basin, and I do mean a hand basin, a galvanised basin with a handle. Washing that. And clean your teeth, and then rush in again.
How was your health, apart from this terrible cough? Any childhood illnesses?
No. I had felt that I'd had childhood illnesses beforehand. I'd had measles and mumps, not necessarily in that order, but at the same time. At about the age of 6, I think. It was during one March. I was off from school for a fortnight with, shall we say, measles. and then the very next fortnight with mumps. And later on, about 1938 time, I had had influenza. But that was the only known illnesses that I had had up until that time. And apart from this hacking cough that I mentioned, I was virtually in good health, which pleased my parents. There I was, fresh air, fresh food. What more could a boy want? And my mother was so insistent that the country air and the food that the Haynes would provide would be of such benefit to me that she refused her to give her consent for me to be immunised against diphtheria. Now, I didn't know what that meant. And, of course, diphtheria was a terrible thing, but largely been eliminated. But I was spared the immunisation, and I was thankful, because I don't like people inflicting pain on me, either as punishment or as injections or dentists. I'll do it myself, but not others having it done to me. So I was quite thankful. I mentioned the fresh food. Now, the Haynes's were symptomatic of what we now know as the good life. They had such a large plot of land that all the vegetables, and I mean all the vegetables, were homegrown. And on another plot of land, they kept hens. So one had a liberal supply of fresh vegetables and fresh eggs. And I was initiated into the delights of such vegetables as swedes. Never heard of swedes before. And swedes is a sort of modern vegetable, because I rather gather that up until that time, swedes was a vegetable one fed to cattle. But they're delicious, mashed or diced. So in season one had swedes. And I still long for cold new potatoes of the taste that they had, and cold new peas, and cold broad beans, and cold carrots. Absolutely delicious, and in fact they make my mouth water even now. How did we arrive at that situation? Well, the vegetables were sown and harvested as and when, and perhaps whether it was by accident or design, there was a surplus cooked at each meal. So at midday there would be more than enough, so the surplus was kept and one had them in the evening, and they really were delicious. Oh, it makes me hungry to think of it now. Never tasted cold vegetables, well, before or since. All the vegetables were homegrown, and one learnt about crop rotation, or one had heard of crop rotation at school, and there one saw it. All right, in a different way. It wasn't wheat, barley, oats. This was potatoes, carrots, parsnips, beetroot.
Did they grow fruit as well?
Yes, they grew. They had apple trees, both cooking apples and eating apples. Plum trees, a Victoria plum tree, a couple of golden plum trees, damson trees, fruit bushes, gooseberry bushes, black currant bushes, red currant bushes, and rhubarb. And one was enlisted to help with the fruit picking. The gooseberries are difficult because of the prickles on the gooseberry bush. The black currants, absolutely terrible, because there's so many of them, and you pick and pick and pick and you get nothing. But there was a lot of black currants, and of course your hands got dirty as well. Never harvested the rhubarb, of course, because that wasn't done in such quantities. Up the ladder, exciting, up the ladder in the fruit, the plums and the damsons. All in all, a very good upbringing.
I presume the hens provided both meat and eggs.
Oh yes, he would buy eggs for hatching and would set them under a broody hen, and there would be chicks, and there would be, the chicks would develop into hens, but sometimes there would be more cockerels than he wanted. But that was all right, because he would keep them and fatten them, and then at Christmas time they would be killed. One went to his sister at Worcester. One was sent home to my parents. But I can't remember having chicken other than at Christmas time. But that was fascinating. A bit of education, seeing the real life chickens being hatched and moved around the patch of grass where the hen looked after them. He would send off for his seed potatoes, and one heard of such things as Majestics and Arran Pilots. Yes, it was an education.
How much did you feel affected by rationing?
There was rationing. I didn't have sugar. I had saccharin tablets. Auntie had the sugar.
Did you miss, for instance, did you miss not having sweets?
Oh, yes. But then I was having plenty of fresh vegetables. Sorry, Mother. And that made up for it. Meat was rationed. Uncle had extra cheese because, being a labourer, and no canteen facilities, extra cheese was allowed to those people. We had our 2 ounces of butter a week. I had more margarine than anybody else, I think. We had condensed milk. Yes, I suppose the rationing did have a slight effect, but there was plenty of vegetables. And the puddings. Though puddings were fascinating, or one particularly. See, Auntie was a very good cook. She had been a cook in service, and an excellent cook. Oh, it was just, the food really didn't need chewing. And her favourite recipe, or my favourite recipe of hers, was apple batter. Now, this was batter pudding with slices of apple just slotted into it, and that just melted in the mouth. Nice. And in retrospect, of course, the rationing, the food that one was allowed to have, the ration food, was just enough to keep body and soul going, and as time has proved, we were healthier for it.
Presumably with their extra food that they grew, you might not have noticed as much as if you'd been at home. I had asked you about that because I wondered how deprived you felt.
I felt a little deprived, only because I was there seeing what went on. I felt a little deprived in that, as I say, I'm libelling Auntie, but she would have the sugar and I would have the saccharins, and she would have the butter and I would have the marge. But really, I didn't do too bad. I just felt that perhaps it wasn't as fair as it might have been, or what I would have been given at home, because my mother would have just spoilt me to the ultimate. So there we are. But I keep coming back to this. It was a happy time.
Did you hear talk from your parents or from anyone else about what they were going through with rationing here in London?
Not that I'm aware of. I knew of rationing and I was sent to get the new ration books in the town and things like that. But really, I was well cared for, well fed. So what could one ask for? I was out of way of the Blitz, the bombing. Ideal. Almost the best part of the country to be in.
You said there wasn't really much about the war at school. But I think you mentioned that the Haynes had a radio.
Yes.
What did you listen to?
We listened as a household to the news. And Mr. Haynes, it was his radio, or he would decide what he would listen to when he was in. And it would be the news and the black and white minstrel show. When he was out, either digging on his garden plot in the summer, or if he went up to the Fox and Hounds, which he did two or three times a week, when he was out of the house, we would listen to other things, such as Itmar and High Gang and those sort of programmes. But as soon as the tread was on the path outside, the radio was switched off, because Uncle only likes the black and white minstrel show. And I used to groan a bit, because I was just beginning to enjoy that particular programme. So one knew of the war. I felt ever so grown up at one stage, because I can remember writing to my parents. I used to write home once a week and received a letter from them once a week, usually on a Saturday morning, enclosing a 1 and 6 penny postal order. But one of my letters, I said, "I hope you have managed to survive the worst blitz of the war so far." And I felt quite grown up, because I was away from home and I was in a place of safety, and I was made to feel grown up, and I think I acted the part.
Were you worried on their behalf?
Probably. But then I hadn't heard of anything terrible happening to them. Almost no news was good news, or, well, if it's happened, it's happened. But the letters appeared regularly, and more important, the 1 and 6 penny postal order, so why should I worry? Life was going on all right, as far as I was concerned.
1 and 6 a week?
1 and 6 a week, yes. And then I would trot up to the post office and cash that, and that was my pocket money.
How did you see the war? Did you think of baddies and goodies, and naturally Britain would win? Or were you so isolated from the war that it was just something somewhere else that really had nothing to do with you?
It's a fair question, although one wasn't that isolated. It was in a comparative sense, yes, compared with my parents. They thought I was isolated, but we knew of war. We had evidence of war going on. There were troop movements through the town. Very quickly, tank traps were erected on the approaches to the town. There were checkpoints and identity cards were checked by the troops. Concrete pillboxes were built on the outskirts of the town. On the road that I walked down, a concrete pillbox was put on one side of the road, halfway up the hill from the railway bridge. On the opposite side of the road, right on the railway bridge, coming out from the bridge to the edge of the curb, was a concrete wall, which almost proved my downfall. I used to go home when I was at, before I went to the grammar school, I used to go home for lunch, dinner as we called it then, and I would rush back. But if I timed it right, I might just be late, I might just be in time, but if I got it right, I could see the lunchtime train taking on water at the station. This was the push and pull line between Kingham and Banbury. And just about 1:30-ish, the tank engine would pull in from Kingham and take on water at the water tower. whether he was a bit late or I was in a bit of a hurry, but I thought I couldn't stand any longer waiting to see this operation go. I'd seen it going on before, and I would again, but I wanted to see it this time. And then, well, I was late for school, really late for school, because I went to school via the doctors. I rushed out of from behind the wall and stood in the road and let a car hit me. And it was just like that. I went into the road, I stopped, I saw a vehicle approaching, and I just stood there transfixed. It was only a split second, probably. But this car just hit me. And the door handle caught me just underneath the left cheek, knocked me to the ground. The two ladies that were in the car, they stopped, ran back. I'm crying, bleeding. They bundled me up into the car, took me to the doctors. It was my fault, it wasn't their fault. And so I went to the doctors, then got to school about an hour and a half later. Bit of relief that I had got to school, and I assured the staff that it was my fault and that the car had stopped, and so teacher was concerned, but not quite as concerned as he might have been. But that was something we kept quiet from my mother because we didn't want to alarm her. Now, we talked about my state of health, and I was in such good health that the wound, and it was fairly long, didn't require, or didn't have stitches, whether it required it or not, I don't know, but it was plastered with iodine, etc. And I had a bit of treatment, but it healed up very quickly. However, I met a neighbour of my mother's in the town. Quite unexpected. Came face to face with her. Oh dear, we've been caught out now. I've got this scar, or this giant scab on my left cheek. I must have looked a bit of a mess. But it was obviously showing signs of healing. What this lady had, when she got home, she mentioned that she had seen me. My mother said, "And how was he?" And she said, "All right, and his face is getting better." What's this? Horror, horror, shock, horror. And the cat was out of the bag. But we feel that the wound healed up so quickly that I broke out in a rash soon afterwards. And it was a form of impetigo, so they said. Or rather, the reaction of the accident.
Why on earth was a neighbour of your mother's in Chipping Norton?
But she went to visit her children. And visits were made, quite unexpected, from time to time. Like, I was on my way to the pictures one Saturday afternoon. I was almost there. It was a mile to walk from the Haynes's to the pictures, and I was within 200 or 300 yards of the picture palace. But the last field to go past, and the cattle were against the fence. And me, being a lover of animals, was stroking the rump of a cow. And round the corner came my mother and father. Well, my mother nearly dropped down dead to see her darling boy stroking a cow. So I quickly took my hand away, not to offend her anymore, and said, "Oh, well, I'm going to the pictures, bye-bye. I'm on my way to the pictures and I'm going." But really, that wasn't so heartless, because they had made a flying visit, possibly to get away from the bombing or whatever, I don't know. Now, they would walk a mile back to the house with their luggage, and they would have a chat, etc., etc. So by the time the pictures had finished and I got home, I'd catch up with them. So not too heartless as all that. But I wasn't going to miss the pictures. No, thank you.
What pictures did you see? Do you remember?
I don't remember. But that, to me, was almost the be-all and end-all, to be able to go to the pictures. One had the freedom of the Haineses, one had the fields, one had the animals there, the radio, but there was also this magnet of the picture palace. And I would go. Saturday was a very busy day. I'd go shopping in the morning, usually me on my own. I'd stand there. Uncle had gone to work, and Auntie would say, I want this and that, collect the meat, whatever. And I would stand there trying to remember, using my famous memory, of what, no list, it was all memory, and I would count the number of items that she wanted, usually 7 or 8. And I would do the shopping almost in that order and count up, and I still do count up the number of items. If I'm asked to go shopping and get something, then it's the number of items, and I count them in the bag, yes, and that's check, 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 we finished. But it was a little bit of a rush. I had breakfast, up to the town, shopping, in time to catch the bus back, because I was absolutely deprived as a child for transport. Used to riding around in Grandma's car and on London Transport, or the London Passenger Transport Board as it was, to suddenly have to walk to school twice a day because one come home for dinner, walk to Sunday school on a Sunday. To have a bus ride was the highlight of the week. So the shopping had to be done fairly rapidly Saturday morning in time to catch the bus back. Then you would, as we said, polish the knives and forks or do some job, other jobs, have dinner, and then walk to the cinema. And that would be a children's program Saturday afternoon. And then home again for tea. And as I got older and life developed, I would go back in the evening for the adult film. So Saturday was a very busy day.
When your parents came to visit you in Chipping Norton, how long did they stay?
Usually the weekend. They would arrive unannounced, but I suppose the invitation was always there, come and see us any time. And let's face it, it was wartime, the Haineses didn't have transport, so where would they be going anyway? So our parents, or my parents, would feel that there would always be somebody in. They didn't go unprepared because of rationing.